Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. Today we are with Scott van der Berg from Hot Start VC, the operator investor behind Fistibles, the Honest Company, and 55 plus creator brands, to talk about turning followers into real companies. 2024 killed 47 celebrity brands. Hotstart's response: back creators who suffered first, stay involved, and solve real problems with operator-grade teams. Scott built Hotstart VC on one belief: distribution is the new moat. And now he's betting the next unicorn comes from creators who already own the customer. Super excited to have you on the show, Scott. Finally, we made it. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolutely pleasure.
Awesome. So let's go. Scott, a celebrity friend. Maybe before we start and dive right in, maybe you can, if someone doesn't know who Hotstart VC is and who Scott van der Berg is, who is Scott and what's your role at Hotstart VC?
Yeah, of course. I'm the founder of Hotstart VC. We are a new venture capital fund that invests in brands founded by celebrities and creators. So like what you mentioned, we believe is that distribution is the new moat. If you look in today's age, it's super easy to nowadays create a product, whether it's a physical product or even like a tech product. With the help of AI, you can build apps in minutes, whereas in the past, it would have taken you years. So instead of like the product actually being the moat, distribution now becomes the moat. And who has that distribution? It's actually creators and celebrities. Mm-hmm. For the last couple of years, they have been building their own audiences and they're now creating businesses on top of it. So yeah, you've already seen companies like Skims by Kim Kardashian, Fenty by Rihanna, and many more reaching growth that traditional consumer brands have never seen before. And this is just the beginning. Literally every single celebrity and creator is now looking to launch their own companies after seeing the successes of their peers. Mm-hmm. Now, that also leads to a little bit of saturation. So as a fund, we are not really excited about the next celebrity launching their own tequila brand or whatsoever, but we're kind of looking for the second wave of celebrity and creator founded brands. That's me and what my friend does.
Nice. Amazing. Yeah. And speaking of tequila and other kind of celebrity brand funded liquids, what's behind you? Like what's on this? I like your background, man.
Yeah, so most of these are actually brands founded by, actually all of them are brands founded by celebrities and creators. Wow. So like if you start here, it's Prime, it's co-founded by Logan Paul and KSI, they're YouTubers. Then it's two candy brands, Joyride, it's co-founded by Ryan Trahan. They recently raised $30 million. Sour Strips, they sold for $80 million to Hershey's, founded by fitness influencer, interesting story. Feastables by Mr. Beast, Tingly Ted by Ed Sheeran. And then you have a couple liquor brands like Casamigos from George Clooney, Aviation Gin from Ryan Reynolds, and some other brands. So these are all kind of the case studies of the typical brands that we like to focus on.
Awesome. Scott, so a celebrity, like let's imagine this kind of situation. A celebrity friend calls you and says, I'm launching a brand. What's the one hard truth you tell them first?
Yeah, so my main question always is what is the problem that you solve and how big is the market? Like are there other people that have this problem? Because if you can't answer both questions, you probably shouldn't launch your own company.
Simple and just right. What's the biggest thing, you know, traditional investors still get wrong about creator or celebrity-led companies?
I think a lot of these investors, and that's also because they're often a little bit older, they don't live on social media like the Gen Z generation or the Gen X or the millennials even. They don't understand how influential these celebrities and creators are and that they're actually changing customer behaviors on the spot. Like as consumers, we don't learn about new products and services anymore from billboards or from Google Ads or whatsoever. We learn it through the people that we follow online. But it's not only that, like these creators and celebrities, they can get people into retailers. They can help you raise capital. They can let every journalist in the world talk about them for free. And a lot of these older celebrities, like if you talk about who Mr. Beast is or Kai Cenat, they have no idea who these people are. So yeah, whenever they see them in a pitch deck, they'll be like, oh, okay, interesting, without actually understanding that this is the unique moat and USP they have.
Yeah, makes total sense. Yeah, and I agree. Scott, you studied like dozens of, 2024 brand failures. Pick one. What exactly killed it and what decision could have saved it?
Yeah, so I think it's always comes back to product quality. So we always say is that the best celebrity brands, they're always product first and never celebrity first. Mm-hmm. And this has to do with that the celebrity might help you sell the first product, but the quality of the product is going to determine if people are going to buy it the second, third, or fourth time. And that's actually where real businesses are being built on, like repeat purchase rates. Mm-hmm. So you see that often, like a lot of these celebrity brands, out of the get-go, they're able to generate millions of dollars in sales, but then they're not able to sustain it. Like if you look at Prime, the beverage brand here, they were able to do $250 million in revenue in the first year, $1.2 billion in the second year. And in year three, revenues are down 70%. And that's just because people bought it once for the flex, but they never bought it again for the taste. So for us, it's always the product quality.
Yeah, makes sense. And I guess also like kind of personal connection or a story that a celebrity or a person can build behind or around the brand that they are supporting or funding, right? And kind of like how they can like interconnect everything around. I remember, for instance, Ryan Reynolds, you have, I think like to me, he's like the greatest living marketeer. And like the things he does with his brands, like everything, like he, whatever he touches, he turns into gold, man. Like he like Mint Mobile, Aviation Gin, now Wrexham Football Club. And I remember him saying like this on some show. I think it was Jimmy Fallon, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. And he was telling a story that, it took him like, I don't know, 20 years or 15 years to make Deadpool. And then like once he like kind of met Deadpool, like the character, he thought like, this is like a love for the... for like one in a lifetime connection. And then he had his wife, and then he met his wife, and he felt like, once in a lifetime connection can happen twice. And then he had, and then they had their children, and then he realized that he loves gin. And then he like transitions into, you know, storytelling about aviation gin. So it's all like brand connected to actually who he is personally, how he appears also publicly. So I think, there's like, so product plus the right team, the right people, the right person, plus the distribution and what they've built. So it's like a kind of combination of all of this.
It's a formula. Like celebrity is just one of the ingredients. Mm-hmm. But without a proper team, without a proper product, without a proper authentic fit, we call this a creator product market fit or celebrity product market fit, you're never going to be successful.
Yeah. 100%. Scott, so before revenue shows up, what's the earliest signal that this is a company in the making, not just, you know, one-off moment?
Yeah, so it kind of comes back to actually what you just mentioned about like Ryan Reynolds' authentic, like although he wasn't the founder, but the authentic co-founder story, or like the relatability-ness of what is the connection between him and Jin. So we call this like creator or celebrity product market fit. So let me illustrate it with an example. So there's an influencer, her name is Dani Austin. She's a lifestyle content creator. She has about 2 million subscribers, which is obviously a lot, but it's not massive like Ryan Reynolds or Kim Kardashian or whatsoever. And she started to experience hair loss, and it got to a point that she had a lot of bald spots on her head. Mm-hmm. And then she was actually being afraid of being in front of the camera because she wasn't looking as pretty as she was doing before. And as a person that has to be in front of the camera all the time, that's obviously hit on your confidence. Mm-hmm. So she stopped with content creation for a while, but then she was like, hey, why don't I actually share about this as well? Because I've been sharing my whole life online. So she started to create content about her hair loss journey, like doing like treatments, like wig reviews, like the amount of times that she was crying on the bathroom floor because things weren't working. And then tens of thousands of women started to chime in and were like, well, thank you so much for being open about this, because normally celebrities, they don't really talk about this. And you're the first like personality to really talk about this openly. And I'm actually also suffering from this problem. So she saw this community getting behind her and actually sharing that they had a similar problem. So she was like, hey, why don't they actually turn this into a company? So for the next 12 months, she built this in public, by the way. She worked with like an R&D team to develop Diffy Hair, which is a hair serum that helps you fight hair loss. In the first year, that company did $40 million in sales. In the second year, it did $55 million in sales. So even though she only had 2 million followers, she was much more successful than some of the celebrities that I've seen with 300 million followers, just because of that authentic creator product market fit. Basically meaning, is the brand that the celebrity or creator is launching, does it fit with his or her personality, content, and audience? So that's kind of what we look for, the signals for us to determine, will this be a success or not?
Yeah, exactly. So speaking about the signals, Scott, you know, beyond follower count, what are the free distribution signals that really predict long-term revenue?
Yeah, so definitely has to do with the metrics are building around that creator product market fit. So it talks about what is the target audience and does it overlap with the target audience of the company that you're like now launching. So with Dani Austin, her audience were other women who were also struggling with hair loss, which is the exact same audience for Diffy Hair. Mm-hmm. Then it talks about engagement. So if you have 2 million followers, but you have a very low engagement rate, it doesn't matter. Then it's actually better to have 100K like followers. But if you have a 10% engagement rate, it's actually a lot better. So what is the engagement rate? And then the last thing I will mention is, do you have proof points that you can actually move product from previous brand deals or previous companies that you have launched? Like another great example here is Sydney Sweeney. Sydney Sweeney, she is now going to launch a lingerie brand. And before she did that, she actually did a co-branded line with Frankie's Bikinis to develop her own bikinis, which was the best-selling co-branded line of Frankie's Bikini ever. And they worked with Jenners and the Kardashians and whatsoever. So they work with great names. But Sydney Sweeney was able to sell everything out within 24 hours, which gave her and investors the confidence that she's actually able to move products like swimwear and lingerie. They're kind of similar. So yeah, those are kind of case studies or data points that we look for whenever we are analyzing like investing in celebrity or creative founder brands.
Awesome. And you know, we also talked about because we talked about as big celebrities and movie stars, and now you know, like we live in a world where everyone kind of can be creator. And so for those folks, young folks that you know are trying to build a distribution, trying to become the next top creators, once the audience is there, how would you turn the first 30 days into like 1,000 paying customers?
Well, ideally, you don't need 30 days. Like if you have done all the steps, you need an hour to actually to get to the first 1,000 users. And I think that's the unique part about like these celebrities and creators is that they have that built-in distribution. So as a traditional startup, like that is your goal. It's like, hey, how can we leverage the first couple of months to get to 1,000 users? But if you do the right steps and validate kind of your problem similar to Dani Austin, like she talked about hair loss to see if it was resonating before she even thought about turning it into a company. Yeah. If you've done those steps, then you kind of know, can I get 1,000 paying customers in hour one instead of like month one?
That's amazing. And that's incredible. And that's the power of, you know, of this new world that we live in. Scott, on the other hand, like how do you keep a creator as committed in, I don't know, month 11 as they were in month one? Like what structures or commitments make it stick?
Yeah. So what a lot of people have to realize is that a lot of these celebrities, they have hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars from their bank. So you kind of have to determine like how hungry are they to lean in for the next couple of years into a specific company to make that a success. And sometimes it also means is that they have to say no to the fancy things, going to like movie premieres and all the other fancy trips that they could do to actually sit in supply chain meetings and the boring stuff, say no to movies so you can actually build a company. Like Jessica Alba is a great example for this. She literally paused her acting career to build the Honest Company, which then led to an IPO in 2021. So it kind of paid off, right? But for every like Honest Company, there's obviously thousands of failures. So we have kind of seen is that there's a direct correlation between the success of these celebrity founded brands and the ownership stakes that they have. The more ownership they have and the more they're like skin in the game they have and the more they're leaning in, the more successful they are. So when we are looking at these contracts, we also always want to talk to the celebrity to understand what is their kind of motivation. Why are they doing this? Is there a deeper purpose? Because if $10 million is not the goal for them because they have already $10 million, you know, and an extra $1 million is not going to change their life. So it has to come from a deeper purpose. And how we structure it in the contract is that instead of giving a celebrity 20 or 30% equity upfront, it's kind of vested over deliverables per year. So instead of getting everything upfront, like per year based on specific deliverables, that celebrity is going to get equity. So that's kind of how we make sure that they're being kept on incentivized and that there's actually a contract that says celebrity is going to do XYZ to fuel the company and help it accelerate.
Makes sense, Scott. And, you know, in the, because we kind of put it in one person, like we've been talking about like one person leading celebrity that builds a brand around her or his brand or product around her, his brand. In that kind of 0 to 1 stage, I was wondering how similar it is to, you know, to startups that I am usually having on the show, and I am usually learning about like technology startups. In the 0 to 1 stage, which three roles are, you know, like non-negotiable for you on the team, and how do you make sure their upside is aligned with outcomes?
Yeah, so to break it down kind of in two questions. So the 0 to 1 process for a celebrity founded brand versus a traditional startup is completely different. And it also has to do is that traditional startups, they're encouraged to launch as fast as possible. So it talks about an MVP. Celebrities can't launch an MVP because if 300 million people are launching, you can't launch an app that is going to crash in a day, or you can't learn on the job. Like there's no time for amateur hours. So everything has to be like optimized on day one. So they spend millions of dollars optimizing the product, hiring the best quality people, just because you can't learn on the job. So the 0 to 1 process of a traditional startup is just completely different than a celebrity. And I think that's why it's important for them to generate like data points on like, can they do like co-branded lines in similar industries with different products, similar to what Sydney Sweeney did, to see if they actually have sellability. Then talking about kind of who are the three-person team that is supporting the celebrity. We always say it's like, it's great that you have a celebrity, but if you don't have a team supporting that person, like actually co-founding it, experienced like operators, you're not going to be successful. Like celebrity is just one of the ingredients. So I would, and it really depends on obviously what type of company you're going to launch. If you're going to launch a tech company, it's going to be different than a CPG company. But in general, I would say it's three buckets. So one talks about the vision. So it's more of the CEO. So making sure everyone is like steering in the same direction and kind of talking about like raising capital and just overall, like what are you doing? What is the mission behind the company? Then the second one talks about the product. So whether that's a physical or a digital product. And then the third one actually is the marketeer. So a lot of people mistake is that they think now they have a celebrity and they don't have to spend a dollar on marketing. That's actually wrong. Celebrity founded brands, they need more money for marketing just to support that celebrity. Because like if you have a celebrity talking and raising awareness, that's just one of the pillars in the funnel. Now, let's say like Prime, they were able to secure like nationwide retail in Walmart on day one. But now you need in-store displays and testing so that people can actually try the product before they buy it. You need like billboards to actually get people to the Walmarts. If you have an online product and people sign up for your email, you now need email marketing and that type of stuff. So you need actually, and also like these celebrities are busy, right? So like coming up with a marketing plan for your company is not on top of mind for them. So you need someone that is supporting them and say, hey, can you help me create this content piece? And then I will actually turn it into the whole system in the content production behind the screen. So I would say a person like that is super important as well, just so you can maximize the celebrity partnership that you have.
It's super interesting to learn about it. Scott, actually, I'm gonna have a fun one now for you. So I would like you to make the case for a LinkedIn creator building a billion-dollar B2B company. Like, who's their archetype? What pain do they solve? And what does like V1 look like?
Yeah, so it could literally be anything. So like let's talk about a niche. Well, it's still a multi-billion-dollar market, but there's a lot of LinkedIn content creators who talk about a specific problem or a specific topic like email marketing. Mm-hmm. So their whole content evolves around like how to write the best copy, what are the titles that you need to have, how you can increase like the open rate or the conversion rate or whatsoever. So what if such a person builds an AI that can basically plug into your email marketing like funnel? And it's going to give you feedback on the spot and say, hey, I think if you change this title, you will increase your open rate with 3%. Hey, I think if you change the call to action, I think you can actually get a better conversion rate. And then it can also give you inspiration. So instead of you having to write it from scratch, they can basically say, hey, we looked at tens of thousands of other email campaigns for other brands, and we think that this is the perfect structure for you based on all the data collected. A lot of people that are already following that LinkedIn content creators are email marketers because they are just keeping up with that content. So I think if you build like an AI like that, which can be very simple built nowadays, that could be massive.
Nice. Here's the idea, guys. Feel free to steal it.
Yes, and we would love to invest in it. So if you need a little bit of capital, more than happy to be your capital source.
Amazing. Scott, this is the time during the show that I usually play a little game with my guests. It's like I call it rapid fire. So I shoot like fast questions. You give me fast answers. It doesn't have to be one word. Like, can be a sentence or two, but we aim for fast ones. Are you up for playing?
Always.
Awesome. Scott, so let's go. This is the first one. Most overrated metric in creator decks?
Follower count.
Okay. Most underrated metric that actually predicts money?
Engagement rates.
Category you'd ban for celebrity launches in 2025 or maybe 2026 because we are just approaching the end.
Liquor brands. The world doesn't need another celebrity tequila or rum brand. We have enough.
Nice. The unsung operator or founder or creator, you want on every cap table, like role plus one line. Why?
I'm going to change the question a little bit and I'm going to say, who is the partner that we want on the cap table? Uh-huh. And that's going to be ourselves. So we have been involved in companies like Feastables and the Honest Company and have scaled like several billion-dollar creator brands. So yeah, we would love to partner with creators and celebrities on turning their companies and hopefully replicate the same successes as our portfolio companies.
Amazing. Sounds great. Scott, last one. Finish the sentence. Distribution without three dots is noise.
Distribution without a quality product is noise.
Nice. Scott, thank you so much for taking the time. We finally made it. I love the conversation. I think the audience will love it as well. Thanks for joining us on the show today, and I'll talk to you soon.